Hey now, welcome to the Dirty Side of the Track, America's leading Formula One podcast. I'm Brian, that's Rob. We have a very special guest, a returning guest. Rob, do you want to talk about why we're so excited this week?
Yeah, absolutely. Pretty much about a year ago, we had a guest come on who was new to the world of F1. He was out there making videos of F1 characters as Mario characters. We kind of hit him up and said, do you want to come on our show? He did. And since we've last had him on, oh boy, has his trajectory been upwards. So welcome back to the Dirty Side of the Track, James Coker.
Yo, Rob, Brian, such a pleasure to be back. And I have to credit the vast majority of my success to the appearance on this show a year ago. So it was really the springboard and the spotlight that I needed to really just expose myself to the rest of the Formula One community. Because I don't know if y'all are listening right now, I don't know if you realize it, but Dirty Side of the Track is the leading U.S.-based Formula One podcast made by fans for fans.
It is. It is. And do you know the site on that statistic, James? It's my mother.
Please.
My mother.
Oh, right. That's right.
Yes.
According to your mom.
That's right. You remember from last? Yeah. According to my mom, we are America's leading Formula One podcast. I've actually had people yell at me about that. They've sent me tweets like, you actually aren't. I'm like, well, my mom says we are, so go stuff it. Anyway. Yeah. You have had an amazing trajectory, as Rob said. And I watched with a sense of envy, maybe jealousy, excitement, enthusiasm. When I saw you at the Formula E event out there doing all kinds of stuff all over the place, like kind of give us a feel for what it's been like the last year since the Dirty Side launched you into this superstardom.
You know, since Dirty Side launched my career and I owe everything to this podcast, since that happened, it's been pretty wild, you know. I will, like I explained the first time I talked to y'all, when I first made the very first F1 related video that I ever made with my wife, Jenny, I thought it was going to be like a one and done thing. And it kind of went viral and I had more footage from that. And I made three more versions and they went viral. And I told myself I'd make a few more F1 videos. And then once they stopped getting engagement, I would stop. And then the engagement never stopped. And you know, over the course of the year, I went from like 3,000 followers on Instagram to like 51,000. And whenever I would try to make something that wasn't motorsport related, it would just get no engagement. So I was like, all right, I've painted myself into this corner, into this very weird,
very
niche
specific corner
for America, where I'm like a motorsport comedy content creator, which was like happened very, you know, totally by accident. It was like very organic, but I don't know. Here we are. I've gotten like a lot of opportunities in the last year. I started making weekly videos for Sports Illustrated's F1 accounts on TikTok and Instagram, which has been really fun. I've, you know, done branded partnerships. I am a content creator for this season of Formula E, season 10. So I attended round one in Mexico City. I'm also attending the race in Portland in June. And I, you know, got to interview the drivers, talk to the teams, do a grid walk, you know, watch quali from the Mahindra garage. It's just like, you know, if you told me this is what I'd be doing, you know, a few years ago, I would have said absolutely no way, because I never watched, I never watched any race in my life, let alone a Formula One or a Formula E race.
Well, so, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I've just been off the phone with my mother, who says you are America's leading comedic motorsport content creator, as you say.
I love
so
that.
Just FYI, she's got you now.
I do think, though, that in Mexico that you did miss a trick, or maybe I missed it and you did do it and I've missed the content. But being down in Mexico, you know, Spanish speaking, then there could have been a whole segment called Coca-Cola. Which I think would have been absolutely perfect.
But called what?
Coca-Cola. So, you know, you could have had the Coca-Cola play, but with hola, you know, it would have just been
like
perfect.
Hola?
And I think you hola, you know, for hello in Spanish. You missed it. You missed an absolute genius
James,
idea.
James, your throne
right
is not at risk to Rob. I'm just being
so
honest.
So a segment called Coca-Cola?
Yeah.
Like Coca-Cola?
Yes.
I'm saying
yes,
hola? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
You dressed as a giant, maybe Coke would sponsor you. You know, you could go around dressed as a giant Coke can and just saying hola to people. But
if I get the opportunity to go back, I will do that just for you. I won't put it out publicly. I'll cut it and email it to you directly.
How, by the way, because that was, when was Mexico? That was
in January.
January. So where did the trajectory suddenly get serious? Because obviously the followers start racking up and you go from, like say, a few thousand, suddenly the numbers are getting bigger, but it's still just you doing content, right? When did the first kind of phone call come through where they're like, hey, we'd like you to do this? And you're like, who is this?
I think the first time was like, because I first started making those F1 videos consistently in like March or April of 2023. I think in May, someone from the Arena Group, which at the time was running Sports Illustrated, reached out to me, asked about making some content for their F1 pages. That's probably when it started, like around May. And then around May or June, I started working with WTF1 because they have a talent division that reps content, motorsport content creators. That's kind of when things got a little more serious. Like, it's still not serious. Like, I still like am just being an absolute idiot online, and like there's no like career trajectory I'm trying to work towards, because there are a lot of really good people that work in the world of motorsport, and it's a saturated and very competitive world. But also, it's like if I were to work consistently in motorsport, I'd be traveling all the time, and I think my wife would divorce me. So like I'm happy to like occasionally get opportunities to go somewhere and go to a race and make stuff from home, but like I don't think I would ever want to work in motorsport full time, because I don't know, I like my life. I like my hanging out with Jenny and my kid. So I don't think I'd want to be traveling half the year. You know
Well,
what I mean?
funny you say that, because we'll hear a race report from Pit Lane Paul later, and he kind of I've had a little sneak preview as I was driving back from my football match this morning, and he references kind of almost coming home for the first time in what feels like forever since they started the season. So
It is a great report. I heard it as well. So he works for Valtteri, travels around the world in the F1 circus, has forever. And so we'll hear that after we get to that point. But shall we
amazing.
talk a little bit about news, Rob? Anything
Yeah,
from the
let's
week you
jump
wanted
in.
to
So
highlight?
we'll do the normal flow. We'll do news and social. Brian's been trawling the internet to see what videos he can find for us, and then we'll do the Japanese review. And I've got to be honest, if I get through to this end of this episode, I'm going to be happy, because I got up at 5 to 1 in the morning to watch the race. I watched the race for
Oh,
2 hours,
man.
went back to bed for 3 hours, then I got up at 6 a.m. because I had a football match this morning at 7:30. So I'm kind of
Now,
running on
James,
vapors at the moment.
10 o'clock last night Pacific. Is that when you watched, or were you in the
Yeah, it
morning?
was nice.
Yeah.
10 o'clock, and race was wrapped up by 1. Nice time to be on the West
Yeah, for
Coast.
once, Pacific worked out great for you for an F1 weekend.
Yeah. Now, Rob, were you playing in the game or were you watching
Yes.
a
Yeah,
football
it was
game?
our preseason friendly. Our season will start in a couple of weeks' time, so it was the first preseason friendly. So I hauled my ass out of bed at 6 o'clock to go and get ready to start playing at 7:30.
What kind of stats are we talking? How was your game?
It was a good game, actually. 2 assists. We won, and I got 2 assists, so I'm
That's
pretty
what I'm
happy.
talking
So,
about. Yes.
yes.
No, don't be nice
Anyway,
to him. Don't encourage him. Don't do that.
anyway, we've only got a little bit of news this week. Not a lot happened. Just this one amuses me a little bit. We got leading engineer David Sanchez left McLaren just 3 months after joining from Ferrari. He was recruited, and apparently, the roles and responsibilities and ambitions associated with the position did not align. And the change was came about because he did not feel stretched in his new role. But they completely hoodwinked him into what his role was when he was coming on board. Hey,
They
Dave,
must
come
have.
join us. Yeah, you'll be king of the world. You can do everything.
Guess. I mean, the only part that I found interesting, because I mean, people don't fit in roles all the time. And the sad part is, if it is, he was not put on gardening leave. So I'm assuming there was no extra sort of what we'd call in America severance to do that. But that means he's free to join another team as soon as he can find a suitable position. So I hope for him that he's able to and take his talents to South Beach, as they say, and he'll find another team to work on. Interestingly,
Yeah, he's
Toto,
going to work for the Miami Heat.
that's correct. He's taking his talents to South Beach. He might work for the Miami Grand Prix. You never
Yeah, you never know.
know. Toto was in Japan this week, and he had not planned to be in Japan, but he decided to show up. I can only assume to bring that trademark scowl, because without that, they would have had a horrible week. Like, I know the team's not doing well, but if you're going to just sit in the garage and stare at the screen with your arms folded the whole time, which is what he did, does that help?
Yeah, I don't know. What do you reckon, James? I mean, so he's there. He's like, right, I'm not going to Japan. And then they've had a terrible week before. He's like, right, that's it. I'm going to Japan.
I don't think it had anything
Great.
to do with his presence affecting the performance or morale of the team. I think it strictly had to do with his perception in the public, because I think a lot of media outlets was were criticizing him for not coming to Suzuka, similar to like how he didn't go last year. And I think last year was because he was in had surgery, right? Or was recovering or something like that. But I think it was all about perception in the public. Didn't have anything to do with team performance.
That's a great point. If Rome's burning, you don't want to be seen as an absentee leader, and especially when you have your fellow colleagues like Christian Horner doing anything to get the focus off of his situation. You know, pointing out Toto's not there. Although I was really hoping we'd get one of these. Like,
so if the car is bad, we know. Please drive it.
Please drive it. I was hoping for one of those this week. We did not get that. Which was
there was Lewis was giving some sass on the radio, though. He said change this strategy, not I think we should change the strategy or what are we doing. He just said as an order from the cockpit, like change this strategy. This sucks because I think he was like they were trying to like. Have him drive like on hards for a really long time.
Yeah,
he
one said stop.
He was sliding all over the place. Yeah,
I agree. But it was actually that was only the second best radio message, but we'll get to that later. Lance Strolls will take the cake for months. I didn't get a chance to download it, but I'm going to get this car's so slow in a straight line. Sorry.
Yeah.
Your best Lance Stroll.
That's actually pretty spot on.
Okay, right. Quickly moving through this. Kimi Antonelli, who we drafted last week. Who did he end up with? Was it Haas we ended up putting him onto? I can't remember. Anyway, we see Kimi Antonelli on the grid in 2025, and he's going to test the W12 Mercedes at the Red Bull Ring later this month. So they're kind of all the rumors are circulating around either, you know, will it be Sainz going into Mercedes? Will they go for youth and go Antonelli? Who knows? One thing they're not going to be doing is rocking around wearing Tommy Hilfiger swagger because they've got the hell out of there and Mercedes have gone over to Adidas.
Or Adidas so for all the American
listeners.
I'm going
to call it Adidas. You know.
You call it Puma as well, which is also weird.
But I mean, both are German companies, right? So like, it makes a lot of sense.
Didn't know if it's
well. Tommy goes with Lewis, right? Because isn't Lewis close to Tommy? So I think as an ambassador, I think they kind of made that decision. I'm guessing this won't be the first Lewis brought Mercedes company, you know, sponsor who ends up leaving, and I don't think it'll be a huge deal because to James's point, there'll be others who want to associate with such a successful team, even if this isn't their best year. So
yeah.
And then Helmut Marko. You got to love when Helmut Marko weighs in on just about anything anymore. It's always, you know, I'm pretty sure the Red Bull PR team just duck when they see these coming across their desk. He wanted to light a fire under the RB drivers or the Toro Rosso or the V-Carb or whatever we're calling them anymore. There's a lot at stake for Tsunoda and Ricciardo. Both might be hoping for a seat at Red Bull, and one should be well ahead of the other. So far, Ricciardo is a bit behind, but let's put it this way. Tsunoda's qualifying speed is okay, but in the race, both are too slow. So I'm assuming Helmut was really interested to watch what happened this weekend because one of them did not acquit themselves well, and one of them did.
I mean, where's the lie, though? I mean, he's just saying what everybody else is thinking.
Right, for once, he's actually saying something that he can say. Sometimes he comes out and says stuff he can't.
Yeah, sometimes he says stuff, and I'm like, Helmut, what are you a doctor in? Eugenics? We all know it's law, though, but yeah.
And then the last thing that we found this week, because it won't die, this one, is that Seb was asked about whether he had if he was coming back, and he said, well, a comeback is in his thoughts, but not a priority. What kind of a clickbait fest quote is that to kind of like neither confirm nor deny? But what's your thoughts, James, do you think that Mercedes with the German connection would stand a chance of bringing Seb back into that seat?
I just don't think it makes sense for Vettel because the reason he left was to spend more time with his family. I do think it makes way more sense that Sebastian goes to endurance racing because the schedule is not nearly as demanding. There's like, let's say he decides to like go to WEC. Like there's like what, 6 to 8 races in a year or something like that. I think it makes more sense that he does something like that. I made a video where I made the argument that he should go to Formula E because it's kind of like aligns with his brand and his values and the environmental and sustainability efforts that he's going towards. But that's also like a bigger commitment. I think more realistically, he'll probably be able to scratch that itch doing endurance racing.
You don't think there's some kind of siren song where it's like he's been away long enough now where he looks back fondly and only remembers the positives and like, well, yeah, maybe I could go back and make it work. I mean, it happens to a lot of people upon leaving something. Oh, they remember the good times, but not the bad.
Yeah, but like people forget that like while Sebastian Vettel at this point is one of the most beloved drivers in modern Formula One history, there was a point where he was getting like the Lewis Hamilton, Max Verstappen treatment and was getting 100% booed on podiums. So it wasn't all, you know, roses and ponies or whatever they say. I don't know.
Roses and
unicorns
ponies.
And rainbows.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of roses and ponies, let's open up the video vault and highlight a couple videos from this week that were worth watching. So now that the door's open,
that's the video vault opening, by the way, James. Yeah.
That was actually a sound of Brian actually opening a vault. He had to get up from his microphone and, you know.
Yeah, my arms are tired from opening that thing. It's heavy. There were three that I'd highlight this week. One, the C-Squared Challenge calligraphy class with Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz. It's on the Ferrari channel proper, not the Scuderia channel. 3 minutes. I liked it. I love these. I've been banging away about getting some C-Squared videos back for a while, and they keep making them too short and putting them on the main channel. Make them longer like they used to be. Pop them back on the team channel. But anyway, this was good. They're doing effectively Japanese characters and words. And again, I've said this many times. I feel like you can take a team, you can add a little bit of Carlos Sainz, and you can have harmony. Carlos and Charles get along great. We knew about Carlos and Lando are still BFFs. I love watching this. I love watching these videos. I love watching these two interact. Carlos, you know, kind of just always poking at Charles. Charles taking himself a little too seriously. Go check it out.
Yeah.
And then the second and last one that's a big one is Lewis Hamilton replies to fans on the internet in the Actually Me series from GQ Sports. There have been a bunch of these. I know I've talked about them over the years, a couple of years, it feels like. I love these. I love these. And then the ones that kind of, they talk about what they take with them when they travel. But the questions from fans that Lewis goes on and answers as Actually Me across different social media platforms, it did not disappoint. It was actually my must-watch video. I don't know, James, if you saw either of these two this week.
I think I've seen clips of it, like where he was the, I think he also used it to weave in like an Almave like Spawn Con post as well.
Okay.
Because they said like, what's your favorite drink?
Yes,
that
it was
probably a plant. He did. But I've seen it clipped out, but I haven't watched the whole thing uninterrupted.
They definitely did ask him that. And like you say, it was definitely teed up, but he nailed it there. And then there was a video I saw on Twitter just really fast. I got to share me being an idiot for a second. It was Carlos and his father driving around in a Ferrari. Then they swap seats. And for anybody who's newer and may not know this, Carlos Sainz Sr. Is a rally driver, a very accomplished driver in his own right. Just did great at Dakar. And so they swap seats. Both are going around and really putting the car through its paces, and both of them are freaking out as passengers. Like when Carlos is driving, his dad is holding on so tight. When they slow down, he actually has to like release the tension in his arms from holding on to the handrest. And then when Carlos Sainz Sr. is driving, Carlos Jr. is yelling, "Brake, brake, 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 brake," the whole time. I love this video. I could not figure out where it was from, then realized it was a year old. So we don't do year-old videos, but it was just had been clipped on Twitter, and I was just enamored. So if you're really bored, feel free to go find that bad boy. And the last thing I had, one of my favorites, and Rob, I realized we do this regularly. We talk about Lollipop Man, who does great race reviews, so funny, so well done. We've talked about Moving Bricks, who do great race reviews with the Legos. All of these things, just so much talent. But the one we don't give enough credit for, at least for me, that I've watched forever is Matt from WTF1. Or sorry, from P1. Look at me. I'm thinking wearing my old hat on. But Matty P1, he does the internet's best reactions. And it's tweets from people, a lot of whom we interact with on Twitter. And it's so funny. And I got a chance to watch because of the midnight start. And we're recording this on Sunday. I got to watch the one a few minutes ago. And it just makes me smile. I love these videos. I love the tweets. So Matty P1, keep it up, man. But that are the videos, and I'm going to close the vault, and then we can move on to the race. Exactly. That was heavy.
Yeah.
Heavy. All right, okay, so Suzuka. Said last week, one of my favorite tracks. Just love it. Now, okay, question for James. You're Logan Sargeant. Last time out, you had your car taken off you and given to Alex. And you're there, you rock up this week, and you go, hey, is that my car? This is Alex's. We've patched it up. We found some duct tape, and welcome to your new car, Logan. Do you think they stiffed him twice here?
Yeah, 100%. But I think I mean, I think he's in a position where he just has to take it, unfortunately. Like, where, I mean, with the exception of like what we saw on the first lap with Albon in the race, like, he is, Alex is far outperforming Logan. So Logan should just be grateful that he has a seat at this point. And I'm not like hating on Logan Sargeant, but I'm just saying, like, the disparity is so wide between those two drivers that I think he's not really in a position to complain.
I think we said, what did we find the stat was? Because we said that the decision to give Alex the car last race was right, because I think it's 86% of the point, all points that Williams has scored since 2022 have come from Alex. So
yeah,
it was a correct team decision. I just, for some reason, I just thought they would at least give Logan his car back this week, but apparently not.
What made me really laugh in Australia was Julian Palmer's comment, where he's like, today's Alex Albon's birthday, his gift, Logan Sargeant's car.
Well, today, as I'm watching the race I watched this morning, and the first lap crash happens, and I see all the tweets, which had been from earlier, where they show Alex Albon pointing, you know, like joking around, looking at Logan's car, for me? I'm gonna take car lap one now. which would have happened in the 50s and 60s, but they don't do that anymore, obviously.
Yeah.
So practice didn't really yield a lot. I mean, unfortunately, Logan then binned it in FP1, and we got the red flag come out for that. FP2 was a waste of time because we had that really pointless rain that didn't make the track wet enough for inters, nor was it dry enough for slicks. I think we only had about like 12 cars even bothered even having a go in FP2.
Yeah, it kind of felt like we were at like Goodwood Festival of Speed for FP2. It's just like, they're going to do a couple runs. They're going to be fans there, but they're not really going to watch much.
Bales of hay right on the side. Call it a day.
And then FP3, and it also happened again in the race, we'll come back to it, is genius / evil camera work, where FP3, Danny Rick spins out, instant camera cut, Liam Lawson in the garage. It's like, you know what you're doing there, boys, don't you? And Liam is obviously trying not to, he's trying to do a real kind of blank poker face because he doesn't want to smile because he knows what kind of furore that's going to cause. But I appreciate a good bit of evil camera work when something like that happens. Don't know about you guys.
No, absolutely. And we saw it again during the race. There was a wonderful frame that we could talk about later with now, Ricardo and Lawson.
James, as an actor, do you think they do blocking in advance of this where they know where they're going to be and they set them up? You have to stand here, Liam, in case something happens and we'll cut to you. It's like The Office. They pan and, you know, he looks right into the camera, which you're not supposed to do. I mean, like, do you think they set it up that much or is it more off the cuff?
I think it's more off the cuff. I think these production people have been around enough. They just know how to get the shot that they need to tell the narrative that they do.
I agree.
But I did notice, though, in the most recent season of Drive to Survive, a lot of the drivers started playing the camera. Like, they would do like looks to camera. Like, they're like Alonso specifically. There's one moment where it was like he was in an episode of The Office where he made a joke and then he turned to camera and was like, and did a little like eyebrow raise.
Not only can he make jokes, turn to camera and break, what is it called? The third wall? Am I getting that?
Fourth wall, yeah.
Fourth wall, break the fourth wall. He can also apparently hold people in his DRS as defensive mechanisms a la Carlos. But we'll get to that in a second. We had Quali. You know, for me, you know, we lost some of the people you'd expect to lose in both Q1 and Q2, with the exception of Lance in Q1. I was a little surprised to see an Aston Martin go out in Q1, but we lost Pierre, K-Mag, Logan, and Joe. And then at Q2, again, kind of like I said, we lost Esteban, we lost Alex, we lost the Hulk, we lost Danny Rick, and we lost Valtteri. So again, you would anticipate some of these cars in the second half of the grid going out in Q1 and Q2. But Lance going out in Q1 was a shocker to me.
No, agree. But the one that you know raises the eyebrows for someone that just can't have this pressure on them right now was that it was Tsunoda or Danny Rick. Yeah. It was one of those two that were going through to Q3. And Danny Rick really needed it to be him going through this week.
Yeah.
And I know everybody, I think anybody, unless you're Australian, I think most people wanted Tsunoda to do well for his home race. But,
of course.
I was thrilled for him when he got through. But you're looking at that and you're thinking, oh, Danny, this is supposed to be a... You know, you had the bad one last time. This is the one where you're going to come and show Yuki that you've got the pace. And it just, not a great start.
Well, Valtteri was also looking great, friend of the pod, Valtteri Bottas. In case anyone forgets,
this is Valtteri Bottas, and you're listening to the Dirty
Try to
side
weave
of
that
the
in,
track.
James, once or every week or
James
two.
Was trying to make a good point, and you're just peddling out the Valtteri soundbites.
All right, so James, continue your point.
I think you were about to bring up the same exact point that Valtteri finished eighth in Q1.
Yes.
Yeah.
He had a great weekend until pit stops, and then the end of the tire deg failed him. That's exactly what I was saying. He was eighth in Q1. He did not quite make the cut in Q2, but the first round of Q2, he looked great. And then when the track evolved, he didn't quite have the car under him for that. But man, it was fun watching sort of the old Valtteri out there in that neon green flow vised kick Sauber steak.
Yeah, Sauber. Joe was not as lucky because I believe they gave him like an entirely new car for the race.
That's why his gearbox kind of acted up in the race too.
Yeah, like I think the what he used in practice and in quali was a different car. And then they realized.
Were they just doing that on purpose to Williams, going, look, we've got a third car. We're just going to roll a third car out. Sorry.
Man. Once we get to the race, I want to talk about third cars, but okay. We'll wait until we get to the race section.
Well, let's just wrap up quali then. It was no surprise that Max took pole. It probably was surprised by the margin. Checo actually kind of took it pretty close to getting it off him. And then I actually was surprised to see Lando up there because the McLaren didn't seem to have the pace, and maybe they just went for Saturday pace rather than Sunday pace. But it was great to see Tsunoda in Q3. But yeah, Mercedes not looking great. But Charles down in eighth really surprised me actually. Yeah.
I don't know what is happening. Like I don't know how. Like eighth is not great. He obviously did well in my opinion, and obviously driver of the day in the race. But he was Mr. Saturday after George was Mr. Saturday when he was at Williams. These are the guys you think about doing these types of things. And he has not had a great set of qualies this year, nor even before today races per se.
Historically, Leclerc is one of the best qualifiers in like the last 5-6 years.
I dragged some stats out. So I'm gonna actually back up James's point when we get to the end of the race. But 100%, interestingly, there are currently, if you look at the teammate battles, closing quali, if you look at teammate battles through the first four races, there are five teammates who have been blanked so far. And I'll give you a couple of them, because you guys will probably be able to figure these out. Max is 4-0 on Checo. Alex is 3-0 on Logan. The one time he just didn't even let him go. So he's 3-0 on Logan. And Valtteri is actually 4-0 on Joe, because we've seen Joe with mechanicals and other issues struggle so far. But beyond those three, can anyone guess the other two teammates, the other two teams where it's a blanked, someone's been blanked and they're both 4-0s?
I think it's Russell on Hamilton, right?
It's not. Lewis is 1. So it's 3-1, okay. Russell on Lewis, but very close. It's close. 3-1.
I would have said Fernando, but I think now I remember a time when he didn't, and we made a big deal about the fact that Stroll had out-qualified
him. 3-1 Fernando on Lance. It's Alpine, where it's Esteban 4-0 on the gas man. Well, 4-0 on the gas man in the slow cars. And then the other one is RB, and it's 4-0 Yuki, because Yuki made it into Q3 in that 10th spot. So Daniel hasn't even out qualified his teammate at this point. There you go.
It's not a great audition for that Red Bull seat right now, is it?
No. But
and then the race comes around, and I have my bleary eyed self on the sofa waiting for the race to start, thinking, great, this is going to wake me out of my slumber because I'm going to be wired to watch the race. And that excitement lasts for about 45 seconds before red flag, Danny Rick and Albon, carbon fiber everywhere. It took me a minute to work out what the heck had gone on, but I think it was maybe the 5th or 16th time we'd seen the replay, but they're all kind of looking at Danny Rick and going, he's looking in his left mirror, doesn't really look to the right, wanders over in front of Albon and takes them out. But nobody got a penalty, right? I looked this morning to see if there'd been anything dished out. I think they put it as a racing incident.
Yeah, but I do feel like even though they have those mirrors, I feel like it's still very hard to see anyone behind you and in your periphery when you're driving that fast,
right,
on especially on courses that have so many turns. But so I do feel like maybe Albon might have been a little bit more at fault than Ricciardo was, because he was trying to squeak by on the outside right there.
I mean, he puts himself at risk is what he's doing.
Right. And he was, and he like, if where like Albon's front left hit Ricciardo's back right, you could argue that that might be a blind spot for Ricciardo. So I don't know.
Yeah.
No, and I think it was fair that it's a racing incident, because I think you're right. I think, you know, Albon puts himself in a potential spot of jeopardy. Daniel is just kind of thinking about his shopping list and looking out the other window and just drifts over. And I think that's probably right. I was expecting a much longer time to rebuild the barriers until I remembered that we were in Japan and the land of high efficiency kicks in, and they seem to get those cars out the way and the tires rebuilt. And what was it, about 20 minutes? I think that's all it was to get it all back in place.
Yeah, I think
again.
It was about half an hour or something like that. But
it was pretty taking a snooze.
It was pretty fast. What reminded me what I thought of when I saw that on the first lap, both those cars crashing, 30, 45 seconds in, I thought of the, have y'all ever seen One Life on the Limit, the documentary?
No, I haven't.
Documentary on Formula One narrated by Michael Fassbender. It's very good. No. Opening scene of that documentary is the 1996 Australian Grand Prix. A young Martin Brundle is driving for Jordan and on the first lap crashes his car, completely flips it over. Car's like torn in half, but he comes out totally unscathed and is looking around. And then you just see Martin Brundle sprinting and he's looking for Charlie Whiting, the Formula One doctor, to get cleared, because back then they had a third car and it was a red flag on the first lap, which means they were going to do a full restart of the race. So he finds Charlie Whiting. Charlie Whiting, he's like, hey, can I go back in? And he's like, yeah. And he did some quick concussion tests, and then Martin Brundle gives the crowd like a thumbs up. Crowd loses it. He sprints back to the garage and he's like, all right, I need gloves. They throw him in the T car or the third car.
Yeah.
And he starts the race and it gets to rejoin the race. And I'm thinking, oh man, I wish all the teams still had a third car, because that's what we might have gotten.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
And I am going to fess up here that when the camera panned quickly and all we could see was the back of the Duracell battery part of the Williams like faced into the barriers, I'm thinking, oh, Logan's done it again.
I thought that too. I thought it was Logan.
You see a Williams crash and you're just like, oh, Logan's done it again. So sorry, Logan. I know you're listening.
I was, but hold on. Because the way the rules are now, just during the red flag, they didn't red flag it till after sector one, right? So
I think you're right.
Overtakes, because it's different. You're right. Like, we've seen this before where they've changed the rules. So after sector one, that's the order they went back to the grid on, I believe. And the reason I'm highlighting this is Mercedes pulled a strategy move during the red flag, and they said, we're going to hard tires from mediums. And so as they went to the hard tires, they checked off their second compound. And so they had two sets of hard tires left, and they could have gone for a one stopper and, you know, hoped for lower than expected deg, especially in the second run. If cloud came, which it did, cloud cover came, but it did, but also with less fuel. So there's less weight. So they were going for saving 23 seconds. And I loved that. I love when a team who they could tell they didn't have the race pace to be up at the front, they're like, let's see what we can do. And I know it didn't work, but personally, I thought it was brilliant. And I was surprised they were the only team who swapped tires, because the first compound counted.
Right.
Yeah, I was actually surprised to see, because hadn't Alonso started on softs?
Yeah,
and then he was like, yeah, slap me another pair on, I like these. I'm like, really? You don't need to stay on those now. You've got those out of the way. But geez, did he make those last. But
longer than the McLaren mediums.
He's still driving on them now. But so we got the restart. It was a nice clean restart. I don't think I would have stayed awake. If we'd had another incident and we'd had another red flag, I probably would have slept through the race. So I was thankful for a clean start. We started getting a pattern where we were getting a lot of overtakes, but they were, I don't want to rant about it because it's my normal little pet hate of DRS overtakes. We were getting a lot of, in the early phases, just the DRS down into, is it main straight into turn one? I think it is where the DRS is a little bit too powerful. But we kind of settled into a period really, really quickly where nobody was in anybody's DRS. It went from very, very concertina to you could almost gauge it was like 1.01, and everybody was like just right, everyone spread out for a bit. We've got to make these tires last. No one getting in each other's DRS. It was like a group agreement that had kind of settled in. But we also saw some early pit stops, and we saw Bottas actually pit in 4 seconds, which I think is a world record for Sauber this year. Those, yeah, I know.
We're celebrating 4 second pit stops as being fantastic for Sauber. And I know we should, because it's better than 52 and 31, and then no one's chasing wheel nuts down the pit lane like they have been the last couple weeks. But yeah, that was, I mean, they had to cover off Hulk, who came in early, and then Yuki came in and Joe came in when his car was still running. And so we actually developed kind of this like midfield battle, right? We're like ninth onwards, somewhere anywhere from ninth to 15th. Where I really found it fascinating. It grabbed my attention, Rob, as you say, because there were many times throughout the race where we didn't have a lot of people within a second in the top six or seven drivers. But I thought it was an extra kind of fascinating part to the race, and it sort of set up in this first sort of stint, if you will, the first 30 or 25 laps or so. It was fun to watch. I don't know. I mean, James, did you enjoy any of these backfield battles that kind of started early on?
I thought what was really interesting is we saw overtakes on parts of the track that we weren't expecting. Like, I believe there were overtakes on the S curves that aren't typically usually attributed to like good overtake spots at Suzuka. But what I started noticing like towards the middle and then back end of the race is we were seeing two separate races, like you're saying, Brian. Like, we were seeing like P1 through 9 in a cluster and then P10 onwards in a cluster. But we were also, with the exception of Stroll, who was part of the back end, we were seeing like a physical manifestation of the disparity we see on the grid right now. We see the top teams having a totally different race from the midfield teams.
You're totally right. I mean, there are five teams at the top, and so you nailed it. With two drivers a team, those are all the points unless something happens. Unless Lance has a bad quali and gets a bad start, then 10th is up for grabs. And everyone gets very excited about that point spot being available. When Max's brakes go and Lewis has a problem with the car in Australia, people get excited because all of a sudden there are two spots where there are points up for grabs. So I couldn't agree with you more. And the way you characterized it, I agree. It actually, if you look at the constructors and even the drivers, it looks like Noah's Ark. It's especially the drivers, is 2x2x2 for a good way down at this point because of the way the teams have structured their abilities and everyone behind them.
Yeah. I mean, Alonso often breaks up the Noah's Ark trend, though.
Yes, he does.
Exactly.
So the only thing we kind of had playing out at this point was it was obvious, I think, that Red Bull were going to run away. Then it looked like Ferrari were probably the fastest, but we were starting to develop, could a McLaren gate crash that party? And then also the unknown was, what the hell's going to happen when Mercedes gamble on the tire?
Charles.
So that's kind of, and Charles as well. So that was the piece we didn't know there. But there was a little bit of a poignant moment just as the first set of major pits, because a few people had dabbled early, but when a lot of the people came in, I think it was lap 17, Max pitted, everyone pitted pretty much, but Charles stayed out. And I saw it on Twitter. They said, oh, that is like angels looking down, where, because number 17 was Jules Bianchi's number, and on lap 17 Charles Leclerc was leading the race, and they were like, oh that's wow. He was wearing that great helmet, and it was like, it was a nice touch, that helmet, and it was just kind of nice little thing to happen. It meant nothing in the grand scheme of things, but just one of those little moments where something like that happens, which is pretty cool.
A couple things just to close from me for the first third of the race or so. James, I'd echo a point you made about Yuki and others going through the S's and making passes in those areas. Checo, for all the grief he got at the end of last year and even into early this year, he was passing people at 130R at the flat-out lefty.
When he took Lewis on 130R.
But then didn't he get George the next time around? It was just crazy.
Just after. It was like on the one lap he took Lewis, he just kept his foot right in and just whizzed past him on the inside of 130R. I was like, that takes some cojones to do that one.
It does.
And then, like he said, he came round and then he took George in almost a carbon copy pass like a couple of laps later.
Well, I enjoyed that. But also, I loved watching Valtteri and Yuki start to really make moves in that second tier of cars. And they were passing people, some DRS overtakes, if I'm being honest, but Yuki had some that weren't. And I was having fun watching them kind of ding-dong cars. Yuki would pass them, then Valtteri would pass them, and they kind of just kept making headway. And it was fun to watch. And, like, again, I really found a lot of enjoyment there. And, again, not just because Valtteri's friend of the pod, but because, you know, it's a great
just talk. Another excuse to play that.
Nah, I can only play once an episode. I got a copyright situation here.
I will say probably one of the most exciting parts of the race for me where it was when there were six cars in the pits at the same time.
Yes.
Yes.
And Yuki ended up in front of all of that and was like also like very excited and appreciative of his team on the radio for yes. getting him out in front of everybody, because you could attribute that moment to him being able to secure P10.
Couldn't have said it better. Totally agree. I was very confused as like the race is happening. They said there are some pit stops happening, but the number of people where it says, you know, in pits or pit exit or whatever entry, whatever it says on the timing board, it just kept piling up. I'm like, something's broken. There's no way there are yeah. six cars in the pits. They would show it to us, right? No, they did eventually. But
yeah, we eventually got the replay. Yeah.
It was crazy. It was.
How did nobody get away with an unsafe release there? Because it just looked like cars were piling into cars. I mean, that's fair play to all of those mechanics that are timing, you know, they have a split second to make a judgment on whether they should release or not. And I think they all nailed it. I think one did.
Lance came out and had to parallel in the slow lane, and he did it. And apparently they referred it, but no action. And we actually have learned from Pit Lane Paul, who we'll hear from very shortly, that the mechanics look to the pit lane wall, the pit wall, and there are boxes where they have to look and see if the box is clear behind their pit box. And so they must have all looked, but I agree with James, that was crazy. I loved it. I do feel like Valtteri had a 4 or 5 second one there, and it kind of cost him a couple spots, but mm-hmm. I don't think it was critical. But Yuki went in and came out first, and you're right, he thanked his team, and it was genuine, and I love to hear that.
Yeah, that was nice.
Yeah, I know when I was writing the notes earlier, Brian, you were like, no, Valtteri did lose places. What I meant in my tired slumber as I was collecting my thoughts there was that I was really worried for Valtteri that he needed to stay in that pack to have a chance of going after points. And if he got done with another 15, 20, 30 second pit stop, he'd get passed by the traffic that was coming around.
Yeah.
So although he lost position in that little group of five that came in, at least they gave him a 4 second pit stop or whatever it was again and kind of kept him on the back of that group. And then it went into a little bit of a lull in this middle one, because this is the stint where everyone's got to play their strategy out and make their tires last as long as they can. So we didn't get a lot happening at this point other than people kind of trying to, like I say, keep the tires going. But then we got, probably coming into what was it, 10, 15 to go, Sainz pits and goes on to the new tires. And I love this about F1 where somebody goes onto fresh rubber and there's quite a distance to go to make up a podium spot. And you can just see that the driver is laser focused on, hold my beer, that's my podium. And Sainz is just, I mean, he's just, we've said this in the pod already this year, he's just like free of any burden because he knows he doesn't have a seat next year. And he's just going to show everybody what he's got. And he's beating Charles almost hands down at the moment. That was a great drive to get back up to the podium.
Also, but I mean, he and Leclerc were on two completely different strategies.
Oh, yes.
So yes, yeah. While like Charles is proving to be the superior driver this season, like I think the strategy they had him on was the correct one. So Leclerc, there wasn't much Leclerc could do to hold P3, I think, for the remainder of the race.
No, he was a sitting duck. When I loved, and I did, I'll be honest, again, I don't know if it was because it was morning or what, or if I'm just stupid. But when Carlos comes on the blower and he goes, hey, are we racing? I'm like, well, you're not making coffee. And they go, oh, are we racing each other?
Yeah.
Right. And then the team says yes. And then to James's point, they basically tell Charles, they're like, hey, you know, Carlos is coming by. Feel free to race him, but don't waste too much time because you got Lando right behind him and you don't want to lose out to Lando. So that was, I agree. Totally different strategies. And the interesting part, and I don't really care when they interview some of these people on the sidelines, but when they go to Bradley Lord, the Mercedes communications director, and they talk about their one stopper, which at this point they undo and they go back, both of them come in for mediums kind of in the middle, late middle parts of the race. He goes, they go, what do you think about the one stopper? And he's like, yeah, I think Charles doing it the best. I'm like, kudos, bro. You see what we see. Anyway, so yeah, I agree. Different strategies, but the question to Rob, I'm with you. When they put him on the new rubber, is there enough time for him to catch Charles? and get ahead of him. And I didn't know if there would be, but there definitely was.
Well, he had to get Lando as well. So right, it was kind of like, will he have enough time to do this? Will he go too fast too soon and ruin those tires in the first couple of laps? Because we've seen that happen before. Somebody gets the fresh rubber and then completely screws it up and end up not making their way, which is Lance Stroll. I don't really know, and this is where we can talk about the message maybe, right? I don't quite understand what happened. He got the fresh rubber on. He was on an absolute mission. He was slicing through.
Taking people in the S's routinely.
Oh, taking people in the S's, taking people anywhere.
He had soft tires, he believed in it. Confidence.
Knight Rider jumping over them. He was doing everything. and then when he got whoever it was he'd been behind for a little bit of time, now he had the clean air to Yuki, I think. He had 7 seconds to Yuki, and I'm like, right, I'm going to watch this. This is just going to tick down. 6.5, 6, 5.5. It didn't. It just, all of a sudden, I don't know whether he'd toasted the tires or not, but he made zero inroads whatsoever. And then he did his little moany little message about not having a fast enough car. I mean, well, it was fast enough about three laps ago when you were flying around, Sunshine.
I think it was actually the Haas team he was complaining about. I think it was Nico in front of him, if I remember right. And yes, the message was fantastic because A, it was like 3 octaves above his normal voice. B, I think he was laughing maniacally at a part of it. And he's like, it almost had a, I can't wait to tell my dad about this kind of quality to the message. Like, Dad, the car's not fast in a straight line, but he needed to get it out now. And I don't know, it was bizarre. I mean, I've never heard a message quite like that one. It wasn't complaining about the car. It had like this, like, resignation, but also mania to it. I don't know. Very strange. I don't know. I loved it. I'm basically,
I think he was trying to complain in a manner that would not, where he wouldn't be perceived as, like, for lack of a better term, a brat. But I think it, like, totally backfired.
Went the other way.
Yeah.
He was shooting here, and it ended up way past where he was going for. Yeah. By the way, we can't miss it before we get towards the end. Logan goes off-roading. I don't know how he stopped the car and got it back on the track, but can we make a deal where people don't reverse onto active tracks anymore unless you have to?
Bad luck.
Wasn't it? I'm watching this. I'm thinking, oh my God, this is not good. Like, I know he has to get through the gravel, so stopping short of the track and turning isn't going to work, but find something else. I mean, like, I was so nervous when he was reversing onto a live track.
When that happened, I was like, oh man, I forgot these cars can go in reverse.
I always kind of think that you're going to get that, like when they don't, on a manual where you don't get it into reverse properly. I'm kind of got Logan sitting there.
Noises coming.
They just don't look like they should go backwards. And then we had the Alonso Piastri Russell train where Alonso kept teasing and kept dragging Piastri along just to keep him out of Russell's clutches because obviously he knew Russell would probably get him if he got past. But the bit I want to talk about, and I've been scouring the internet and the FIA webpage to see about the penalties, but George runs Oscar off the road and forces him to cut the chicane. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't get the place then, but he is close enough in DRS to nail him down into the first corner. And it said it was going to be investigated. I don't believe anything has come of it, and there was no penalty. Wow. Because for me, that is... He forces Oscar to get out of the way or be hit. That is not dangerous, but it's... I don't know. I think that's a 5-second penalty for other things that we've seen get penalties. Because if he doesn't do that, he doesn't get close enough to Oscar, and he doesn't get... So, two things. Oscar doesn't fall out of the DRS of Alonso, and Russell doesn't get the DRS to take him. So, but forcing him off the road, he's basically cheated his way past Oscar.
James, please hold your powder. I'm going to let you be the arbiter of this one, because I disagree completely with Rob. First of all, it was a bad move by George, but he didn't gain the position on that lap. He forced...
I know.
Oscar off. Oscar goes through the chicane, comes around. It's the next go around where he gets him, and he actually gets him right out, coming out of the chicane quickly because Oscar made a boo-boo. But so I agree with you. It's on George. There was very minimal contact, it looked like, but there was still space on the track for Oscar to have tried to hang his car out there, half of it, get a tire on. I know he shouldn't have. I agree. You're making a face. People will never see it. It's a great face. We should put on a t-shirt. People will cry. I feel like it was a racing incident. I don't think it was a big deal. I mean, George made a move that was dumb, and he didn't gain because of it. He gained eventually, but not because of the move. Oscar wasn't damaged.
That knocked him out of Alonso's DRS.
But it wasn't that lap. It was a whole lap.
No, I know. But it just, all I'm going to say is, and I'll let James do the adjudication, is that just devil's advocate, if that car isn't George and it's Max on anybody else, everyone's in uproar about this.
But he's
got his elbows out again. He's such a violent driver. Anyway, sorry. Go on, James.
Yeah, James, solve it for us, please.
I don't know. I'm not going to give you an answer you like, because I feel like looking at incidents like this in these races is like watching Rashomon, where like there's like your truth, my truth, and then in between it is the real truth. And so like I think often when it comes to them ruling whether certain incidents should be penalized, often I feel like they default to like no harm, no foul.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened here. And I think so often when these things happen, you know, a driver will say it was their fault and the other driver will say it was their fault. And, you know, it all depends on which team you like, which driver you're rooting for. So,
actually maybe they didn't air it, but the one thing that then made me, although I still thought it was maybe penalty worthy, I don't think we heard anything from Piastri saying, "Hey, you ran me off the road, man." But I think Piastri's got more class than that anyway. Maybe not to moan about.
He did say message, something on the radio, yeah.
But calm. Okay, it was so calm. Yeah. He did say something to James, as James says, but he basically said, "Yeah, George just bumped into me and I went off a little bit." Like yeah, his heart rate never went above 50 beats a minute. It was
he
crazy.
Very calmly said something to the degree of I had to cut.
Right.
I had no space.
Maybe yeah.
I think he almost said that so he wouldn't get looked at. I heard him say that in a defensive way, not a accusatory way, but that's, again, right. Me reading between the lines that I don't understand. Yeah.
Okay, well, that then was kind of the last major action. We got the 1-2 for Max and Checo, Red Bull sealing that, the Red Bullet train of Japan. And then, nice. I know, do you like that? That's the episode title, by the way.
James Coulter on the Red Bullet train.
And... other stuff happened in terms of finishing position, but the absolute biggest cheer had to be as Yuki came around and secured 10th. That was just love it. Loved the shots of the crowd. He was obviously just so happy. So yeah, thrilled for Yuki.
I love stats, but I'm not going to do the SAP stats yet. I'll save those for a minute. But it would be remiss if I didn't highlight Yuki did finish in the points. 10th got that point. He was a lap down, so that's why you saw him celebrating so quickly. Because he passed right after Verstappen when the track is done for him. But the top nine, as we kind of highlighted, Lewis was 48 seconds behind Max, which is not great, but also I guess not the end of the world because he's ninth. However, then the next driver is Yuki, a lap down. It's a minute 30 was a quali lap. I mean, there's a huge gulf between the top teams and the lower teams. And I think the only delta is basically, is Checo with Max in domination and is Lance in the top teams or is he not? It seemed to be the only two things that fall apart each week.
Also, Checo is making it very hard for Red Bull to justify giving that seat to anybody else. I know we're only four races in, but like he's proving to continue to be the perfect number two to Max.
He's second in the drivers. He finishes second every time he gets an opportunity. What else do you want him to do?
And with the exception of the beginning of last season when he like made the statement about wanting to be world champion and then was humbled a few races later and it was very clear that he didn't have a shot, with the exception of like that brief moment of delusion he had last season that a lot of us bought into as well. He like is proven to like be 100% on board to like being second fiddle to Max, who, you know, if he continues to drive like this, might probably go down as the greatest driver ever, but that could be like a whole another conversation.
According to my mother as well.
Yeah.
So we were hitting the time where we've got to give our awards out then of King of the Pits versus the Pits. So you got the music ready, Brian, for King of the Pits?
I do not, because I forgot we had music for King of the Pits.
Oh my gosh. It's just like working with a toddler.
It is. So here's our King of the Pits.
Hey, you're the King of the Pits.
All right, James, you get to go first, sir. You get to call. And these are not mutually exclusive. So if you pick one, we can also pick one too, just so you know.
Cool. I think there are a lot of good options for King of the Pits, but I'm going to say Yuki Tsunoda because he got points at his home race. You know, he should be very happy with the drive that he had, given that he's driving in a midfield car. And, you know, I think he always finished just out of the points the last few years, like 12 and 13 or 14 around there. So very happy for him. The pits, while I would hate
keep your powder dry for the pits.
Okay. Okay.
Keep your powder dry for the pits. Yeah. We've got special music again for that one. So.
Okay. Noted. King of the pits, Yuki Tsunoda.
I like it. Rob, how about you?
Do you know what? If it hadn't, I'm going to agree with James. I'm going to go with Yuki. But do you know, for the first time in almost forever, was very, very close to taking it for me was Checo, because I thought he did an awesome drive to. Okay, he didn't challenge Max. Like, I would love him to be able to take that same car and challenge for a win. But this time, he made passes where he needs to. That pass on 130R was amazing. He sliced through traffic. He didn't make any mistakes, apart from when he painted his front left tire green when he went off track at one point slightly. But it looked quite cool having a green wheel. So Checo really, really super close, but I think you have to have a heart of stone not to give it to Yuki.
I have a heart of stone, and I'm not giving it to Yuki. And I've been hard on Checo. Like, I know that. And you know, for those who listen to us regularly, I'm a Checo fan. I love what he does with the cars. I love what he's done in his career. I love he's a tire whisperer. He's my guy. But I can't give it to him, and I'm not giving it to Yuki. I'm giving it to Carlos. I'm giving it to the smooth operator, because in my mind...
Smooth operator!
He didn't win, but... He is proving to everybody at a point in his career where he doesn't have a drive. Some people might fold in this case. Like, it's a lot of pressure. Every single friggin' race event, quali, the race, he can't put a foot wrong because he's trying to get his next job. And he's been a 100% podium finisher, three races that he's raced in, all podiums. That's insane, considering Red Bull is so far ahead of everybody else. There have been two non-Red Bull winners in the last 2 years. Both Carlos. And so I gave it to Carlos F Sainz.
What does the F stand for?
You're fantastic. And now we're going to talk about the pits.
You're the pits.
All right, Mr. Coker, you're welcome to go first for who you thought was the worst this weekend.
Just for the people keeping track at home, full name is Carlos Sainz Vasquez de Castro.
Yes, F, but you consolidate it and you put an F in there and it works.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you add a V and a D and a C, it ends up becoming an F.
Correct. Yeah, that's how we do it.
So for me, the pits is, unfortunately, I don't want to say it because I really like this team, and I'm also wearing their sweatshirt right now, is going to be Williams. You know,
it's a nice sweatshirt, by the way.
Thank you. I made it. I assembled it.
You
I didn't make it.
It.
But the vintage patch from eBay, blank is from a company called Ours. And then I had my friend Serena make a patch that's the red five.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
She designed and fabricated that red five patch that I put on the back of the hoodie.
That is so cool.
Thank you. I'm going to say Williams. Just, you know, I feel like they took a gamble on not having an extra chassis. And I'm sure that was for like cost cap reasons. And they wanted to put that money elsewhere because James Vowles has made it very clear that they're so far behind when it comes to like the development of the car and the teams, like they probably wanted to put it somewhere else. It's a gamble they took, you know, lost on it. Just how things have been handled the last few weeks haven't been great, but I still love Williams. I love James Vowles. I would follow that man into any battle, but I got to give the pits to Williams this week.
He speaks honest truth if it hurts him that much. Rob, how about you?
You know, I was very close to going 2 for 2 here to agree with James, but I was kind of looking at, I know Logan binned it and went off-road racing, but actually his fastest lap was a good couple of seconds faster than the team. I'm going to give it a collective here because I'm, like James did for Williams, I got to give it to Alpine.
Yeah.
There's just nothing happening with this team. And Ocon went backwards. He started off, I can't remember where he exactly started, but I just, every time there was an overtake, it was just Ocon. And he was just going backwards and backwards and backwards. And they've just only finished ahead of Logan, who went off-road racing, and the three DNFs. Other than that, I actually feel sorry for Ocon and Gasly because they're just driving lawnmowers around at the back. And I don't see, what do you do? How do you kind of motivate yourself to turn up each time to race? Yeah. Maybe it's huge sums of money, maybe, but just the Alpine organization is just don't know if they're just getting themselves ready to sell to Andretti or somebody else, but they just don't seem like they're really in it to win it or even compete.
Feels like that.
It does, sadly, but they're also, you're both incorrect. It's Daniel Ricciardo, who is running out of time to show something, not just for the RB, the Red Bull seat, but for RB or a place in F1. There's a reason he sat out some time. The McLaren thing did not go well, and it has a very eerily similar feel to the way he's answering questions, the way his attitude is. I don't know if he has it anymore, and I hate to say this because Ricciardo is my guy. I loved him forever. I had three favorite drivers for a very long time, and he was one of those three. And I don't know what Rob wants to say something desperately. He's waving his arms. He took off his sweatshirt.
I meant to put this down. Damon Hill. I can't even remember where I found it, but he'd said something along the lines of, he's got to stop making excuses. It's like Daniel Ricciardo feels at the moment like a driver where everything has to be 100% perfect and all the stars need to align and then he can deliver a race. But the moment one thing is slightly askew, he almost like, he can focus in on that and go, oh, well, I can't possibly have a good race because I didn't trim my left toenail enough and that's just going to ruin the whole thing. Well, so, and whereas Yuki is able to just go roll up his sleeves and go, I'll make the best of it.
That's why I was so surprised by that quali stat, 4-1 Yuki to 4-0 Yuki to Daniel. I didn't see that coming when I did that research.
A lot of people think Daniel has lost his mojo, and like those people might be right. And I do also think there is a perception that people have of Daniel Ricciardo that he's actually a better driver than he actually is in reality. Because if you look at the stats, I made a video defending Checo last year when there were so many people critical of him. Checo and Daniel Ricciardo's stats are very similar over the course of their career. I think Daniel Ricciardo might have one or two more race wins, but they have like a similar amount of podiums. Like, I don't think Daniel Ricciardo was ever going to be a world driver's champion. Like, I think he is like a Mark Webber of our time. Like, he's very charismatic. He's like good looking, people like fan favorite, but he's never going to be the best in the field.
Yep. Yeah. I agree as well. Should we hear from Paul and what Paul thought about it?
Pit Lane, Paul, yeah. And now you got his music.
I do, of course. I'm ready with that. He's Mr. Pitside. I still think we need Andy to put a little yeah in there at the end, but that's all right.
Hey now, so coming live from a F1 paddock that's packing away. We're not, of course, because we got to do some testing here. Tire testing, I'll probably do pit stop testing, to be honest, but let's not go there. Japanese Grand Prix done. Well, yeah, well, that was good, actually. It was a great race, loads of overtaking. Take the Red Bulls out of it. I think we've said this before. We've actually got a really good at a really good event. So, it's not a great deal to complain about. Really, loads of overtaking. The DRS is strong here with the last, let's say, sector of the lap. But that's actually good. I'm quite happy with that. It's quite positive. Ferrari again. They're there, aren't they? They're digging their heels in. You can't look past Max and Red Bull. We know that they're going to walk away again. We know that, we've got to accept it. But the battle behind is actually really good and fascinating. Mercedes, McLaren, Ferrari, that's a good little battle. Trading places. Mercedes, they seem to have got something there to this weekend. Then they seem to then not have something here. So that was a bit weirdly frustrating. Frustrating for Lewis. And then moving backwards, really, that's, you know, if we're going to go right the way back down, let's go down to the back end of the grid. Alpine again struggle. I actually spoke to Otmar this week and we had a bit of a catch up, and I have to be honest, we had a bit of a laugh about the situation. You know, not that it's per se funny for them, but yeah, that's where we are. Then really, you know, from there, okay, we had another small pit stop issue, slow stop. Show had a gearbox issue, so we find ourselves down with Alpine on nil point. Williams, bloody hell, I mean, like, if they've only got two chassis, they are really riding their luck, you know. They seem to just have incident after incident, so it's pretty concerning down what's going on with those guys at the moment. And then really, Haas killed us in straight line speed today. From our side, you just can't overtake them in a straight line. You know, they are actually very fast in a straight line, which sounds ridiculous, but you know, when your overtaking point is straight line based, your DRS really isn't as strong against a car that's got such, you know, really good straight line pace. It sort of screws you a little bit. And then, yeah, again, Yuki look fantastic for him. I'm one of these people, I think I've mentioned before, so I always want, like, a home driver to win his race. And there's not many fans who've got the passion of the Japanese fans. It's an amazing place to come. It's just sensational to be here, and the atmosphere and the support. So for them to have something to cheer was really good. It should have been us, if I'm being honest. So a little bit bittersweet, I guess. But no, look, a fantastic race, really good. And it's a big nod to, let's say, old-fashioned tracks. Melbourne is sort of an oldish, fashioned-ish sort of track. We've gone through the Arabic ones before that. China, the next race, actually going to be quite interesting. You know, from our side, Wuzhou is going to be pretty hectic, pretty busy. I will head there. I'll go home Thursday. We're testing for a few days, and I go home. And then onwards to Shanghai 4 days later. So looking forward to seeing my own bed, looking forward to seeing my house, make sure we're still standing. And yeah, we'll catch up there. And that's going to be a really hectic one. Again, it's back to being not an old-fashioned circuit, but a circuit that, because a lot of people haven't been to in a long time, there's some drivers who have probably never raced around there. So it could, you know, it could again make for a really fascinating race weekend. But this one's been excellent. And that's it for a few weeks. Over and out. Catch you soon.
Paul, thanks, man. That was fantastic as always. So, any notes from that before we hit the stats?
What does Paul do with Valtteri?
Rob could describe.
He's kind of his, I guess, is his manager, I guess. He started off in BAR and just kind of like stayed at that team as it got bought by Honda, and he worked with Jenson Button for Braun in that year, and then Lewis at Mercedes. And then he was working with Valtteri at Mercedes, and when Valtteri left to go to Sauber, he said, hey, do you want to come with me? And he decided to go because he was very, very close to giving up and just kind of stopping doing this traveling circus. But he's been following F1 around the world for, what, 20 plus years now?
It's he's been a mechanic for a long time, done all kinds of different things within the teams.
Cool. I wonder if he was at BAR when they tried to pull off the two different liveries back in 1999.
Yeah, he would have
probably
been.
Probably,
I think it was the late 90s when he started at BAR. So
I remember.
Because he helped get, he was working with Villeneuve at the time, who he helped get onto this little pod. I'm trying to plaid while Brian racks it up.
You want me to do it? I could do it. I mean,
this is Jacques Villeneuve, and you're listening to the Dirty Side of the Track.
I mean, we've got world champions, we've got current drivers, we've got all kinds of people who have come on. We've got America's leading comedic motorsport content creator, according to my mother here, James Coker. James F.
Not
Coker?
According to most, but according to your mom. And that's
correct.
All that matters.
She can't find these podcasts. She's 80. I just have to tell her when we do stuff. But let's hit some stats. And because it was a fun race, we're using Slap House to introduce SAP stats from the Japanese Grand Prix 2024 edition with James Coker joining us. Verstappen today won a third straight Suzuka race, something only previously achieved by Schumacher, 2000, 2001, 2002. We heard that on the telecast. He won from pole for the 30th time in his career. And I had to do a little extra research when I saw this. He's had 36 total career poles, which I didn't do the math, but it's like about 82% conversion rate. Which makes me think about our dear, dear friend, Charles. 23 poles, 4 wins from those poles. 4 of 23. And I know he's not in a Red Bull, and I know he's Mr. Saturday. But it's worth also noting, because I went further down the rabbit hole, because I love Charles so much. He only has one other win. He has 5 total wins, 4 from pole position of his 23 poles. And that was Austria in 22 when he started second. So if he's not starting high, he ain't winning it, apparently, according to the stats.
You know, I'm probably going to get canceled for this comment, but Charles Leclerc is a lot like a stripper who's bad with money. He spends a lot of time on pole, but doesn't have much to show for it.
Oh, my God. That's even better than my line. My line is Charles Leclerc has a soft spot in my heart and a hard spot in my pants. I think you win, James. I like that. I'm stealing that. Is that okay?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, done.
Moving on.
Stolen. Verstappen became the fourth driver in history to reach 3,000 career laps, led after Schumi, Vettel, and Hamilton. It was the fifth consecutive Japanese Grand Prix, and this one was a shocker to me. Fifth consecutive Japanese Grand Prix in which the winning margin was over 10 seconds. And those aren't all maxes. So we may not be getting bangers or races at one of when we did in February. We did February, hashtag February F1 Fantasticness, best track around. Suzuka made it far, but we haven't had a good finishing challenge in a while. It was Red Bull's 31st 1-2 finish. Now they're only two behind Williams for fourth place all time in 1-2s. And this was the first time ever now we've had four consecutive 1-2 finishes to start the season where we've had multiple constructors involved. Obviously, at Australia, we had Ferrari. I already said this because it was obvious. Carlos Sainz, 100% podium finishing record, 3-for-3. The appendix took him out of one. And then Leclerc hasn't finished lower than fourth in any race this year. So while he may not have a lot of money to show for it at the end of the day, he's always up near the top and being requested, Charles, come to the main stage, please. He finished fourth last year as well in Japan. Lando took P5 from McLaren, finished 10 seconds further behind Verstappen than he did last year. And if we all remember the calendar, Japan was near the end when McLaren had the upgrades. So, Rob, I know you're trying to be Johnny Optimist all the time, and I wanted to make this a pickleball podcast after the first two races, but that's not a good sign either, that Max is pulling away from the McLaren team.
We know that McLaren haven't done their upgrades yet, and you're comparing to it when it was late in the calendar last year when they were more of a rocket ship. So that's not really like for like, is it?
It's totally fine. And so then Aston Martin, Fernando was P6, his best result at Suzuka since 2013. So Fernando enjoyed his time. And then the flip side of the coin, P9 for Lewis Hamilton. It was the first time he's finished outside the top five at Suzuka since 2014. We've already talked about Yuki. He's the first Japanese driver to score a point in his home race since Kobayashi in 2012. We heard that on the telecast. P14 was Kick Sauber's best result of the year for Valtteri, or tied it, equaled it. And the last one I have is Williams' Alex Albon crashed out at the start after contact with Daniel Ricciardo. Albon has had four career first lap eliminations. Two of them have come at Suzuka.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That was action-packed sap stats.
It was something. And then, you know, we always do, James, we have a fantasy league. A bunch of our of the dirty siders who listen with us and talk about F1 participate. This week, we had a handful of folks really nail it out of the park. In particular, for the Japanese Grand Prix, the winner was Kimi's yacht, Selena. She had 356 points. Now, she did play the limitless chip, so good on you, Selena. Charles, Carlos, Max, Checo, Lando, Ferrari, and Red Bull. So I think that's a perfect run.
Wait a minute. In this fantasy league, do you have no budget? Like, it seems like you're just picking the top five drivers.
When she used the chip, the limitless chip, which allows you to do whatever you like one time a year.
Okay.
She went for it. We've had F1 Fantasy HQ Adam, who's been on a couple times. He finished second, so he knows his stuff. Real Karuna, Ayadev, sorry for the name mess up, third. Professor's B-Team, Rakesh, Kimi Hakkinen, Niku, fifth. Tails I Win, Andy, good job. Tied for sixth with What's the Racing Point, John, nice job. Ant Racing, Anthony, eighth. And then a tie for ninth, Merkstappen from Fakri, and then Waystar Royko from Busan. Nice job, everybody. Now,
I love the fact that you're always saddled reading out the team names because I swerve that every week.
I'm not good at it, but at least I lean into it. I had a terrible week. I had 215 points. I finished 25th in our league. However, I just want to point out that the second finisher in our league, I mentioned Adam, Fantasy HQ. He runs, James, he and Fantasy Hub have one of the largest fantasy sites around. They come on all the time. They're great guys. We had the same team with two exceptions. We both had Charles, we both had Lance, we both had Nico, we both had Red Bull, we both had Ferrari. He had Valtteri and Yuki. I had Joe and Alex. Joe and Alex were negative 37 points because of the DNFs. Oof. So I went up 215, he's 270. Rob, I beat you by 1 point, you had 214.
1 point, I know. My Georgia sweaty visor had 214 points. So, yeah. Oh, well, never mind. So, James, before we let you go, what's next for you then? Any big events planned? What's coming up next in the world of Coca?
I believe I'm attending the the Long Beach Grand Prix for IndyCar in a couple weeks.
Ooh, nice.
Courtesy of the lovely folks at Andretti, which should be fun. I unfortunately can only make it for the race. I have to go out of town for work before that, so I am going to miss quali and like the testing days. But I'm also supposed to go to Portland for the Formula E E-Prix in June.
Amazing.
Other than that, and will you sort of, go ahead.
I'll say, and will we be treated to you in the overalls and strutting your stuff down the along the grid?
I people loved the tracksuit so much. I feel like I have to start wearing a tracksuit to every race. So I'm gonna have to start buying tracksuits in every color.
Was it a velour tracksuit? I couldn't really.
It
tell.
It was not velour. It was like full on polyester. It was like a it was a Speedo tracksuit. Oh, that's Frank from the 70s that I found at like a Salvation Army in Orlando, Florida, like 20 years ago.
It was awesome. It was so good.
Yeah, it was fun. Oh, but the drivers really appreciated it because the second I walked up to them dressed like an idiot, they relaxed because they're like, oh, this guy looks like a moron. This guy's not going to ask me any hard questions. This is not a real journalist.
So we were fortunate enough at Canada last year, not to ask people questions, but we got into the paddock. Paul got us into the paddock and we were there wearing our Dirty Side t-shirts. And no one took us seriously either because the first person who walked past us was George Russell. He was being interviewed on Sky Sports. And Paul, Rob, and I are standing there. We're eating these bear claws things that we're handing out. We're living the best life. And Rob goes, it's George Russell. Look, it's George Russell. And people could hear us.
I did a Lance Stroll. I went up to
him. You Lance Strolled it. And at that point, no one took us seriously. And they all walked right by and said hello because they knew we weren't going to do anything serious because Rob had already seen George Russell.
Did George Russell hear you say George Russell like that?
He was busy on TV.
Literally, probably only dogs could pick up the pitch. It was so high.
There is a YouTube of us where George walks by, and then you see us turn around and kind of smile and smirk. It was right after that, so we're YouTube.
And of course,
famous.
Paul, who is a veteran of the paddock, he let me off completely and didn't make fun of me for the rest of the day at all. It was very nice of him.
That's just okay. Brian made it fun of you.
Yeah, no, Paul ripped him the whole time. The problem is then I went and punched a Ferrari mechanic accidentally in the face with my excitement. I'm like, look over there! And then I knocked the guy down. Yeah, well, you know, things happen when you bring the Dirty Side around.
Anyway, James, it's been brilliant to have you back on again. And,
thanks for having me. It's a blast.
No, good luck for everything. I really want to see this taken to the next level, and you need to be in Austin or Vegas. They need to invite you, get you, and the tracksuit. In fact, Brundle needs a rest. You need to be doing the
grid
walk. I want the Coca walk on the grid walk. That's what they need to be doing.
That'd be fun.
James, thanks so much for joining us. It was a really interesting and fun Japanese Grand Prix. Everybody, thanks so much for listening. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you in 1 week's time when we preview the Chinese Grand Prix. Be well, everyone.